Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everyone? This is a Locked On Network podcast crossover. I'm Chris Manning from Locked On Cavaliers.
I'm Wes Goldberg with Locked On Heat.
So the Cavs and the Heat just played a game in Miami. The Heat win this game 124-121 in overtime. The Cavaliers rest Kyrie Irving and LeBron James. Kevin Love fouls out. The Heat keep their playoff hopes alive. The Cavs now are down to the 2 seed in the East. The Cavs, fun fact, have lost 13 straight games in South Beach. I know Deion Waiters, unfortunately, which would have been even better if Deion would have been in this game, of course. But, Wes, I mean, let's talk about the Heat first, because I think there's more to learn. And this game was more important to the Heat, quite frankly. What were your takeaways from this game?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, the Cavaliers, when they rest LeBron and Kyrie, they're admitting, if we get the one seed, that's nice, but we're more focused on getting LeBron and Kyrie some rest. So Celtics can have this thing if they want it. But for me, what stuck out for the Heat is, I don't know, just the idea that this team just continues to have something to play for when everybody so early in the season was saying that they didn't. Like, was trying to convince the Heat with, like, opinion articles and columns that they should be tanking, knowing full well, like, every column I would read about tanking would be like, we know that Pat Riley and the Heat won't tank, but they should, and here's why, and then 700 words about why they should. And then, but they just didn't. And this team, you know, look, they don't control their own destiny. They still need Indiana or Chicago to lose to make the playoffs. But if they would have lost tonight, they would have been eliminated. So by winning this game, they just give themselves a reason to play Wednesday night's game, which is the 82nd game of the season. It just seems all this team wants to do is just keep playing basketball for as long as possible together. And that's, like, just a cool thing to see. You know what I mean? When you have Sam Hinkie teams tanking to try to get to the bottom of the draft, which is not something I'm against, but just having a Heat team that just wants to keep playing and it doesn't really matter why, like, long term, they just want to keep playing basketball. That's unique. It's novel. It's refreshing, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I thought what Miami did in this game that I thought won them the game, and at least I gave them a shot to win this game, which is more important. And that 11-point swing in the fourth, they went small. Like, they went away from Hassan Whiteside for, like, a long stretch in the fourth quarter. You had James Johnson beasting. You had Wayne Ellington just shooting incredible from three, really. I actually really like Wayne Ellington. Like, he was another former Cav. He's very fluid coming off screens. Something I think he's improved that since his Cleveland days, it looks like.
He needs, like, no time to get off either. He could be not facing the basket, and he just turns around and pops it.
Yeah, it's something like you saw Korver do a couple times in this game where he just looks like he's just flicking it, but it's really, like, a very in-control shot. I thought the Cavs were totally thrown off by that because I thought they did a really, really nice job of attacking Hassan Whiteside. And although Hassan Whiteside had, like, good numbers, he was a minus 12 in this game. Like, single game plus minus, yada, yada, yada. But, like, they attacked him, and then coincidentally, Hassan Whiteside was actually pretty important in overtime. Like, it sort of worked out that way.
I mean, they went to Whiteside pretty early, and that was a little reminiscent of the early Heat season team. They went to him early because, you know, the Cavs don't have Tristan Thompson in this game, so they're starting Channing Frye at center. And at some point, Miami decided that that was a mismatch that they wanted to try to take advantage of. So they go to Whiteside early, and they just post him up, which it was not the right way to do it. They're like, here, take the ball and just be taller than Channing Frye and bigger. And he was, but he couldn't score on it. Whiteside is big and tall and strong as he is. struggles to get position. Like what I always say, he doesn't do his homework early in the possession. He just wants the ball and then he'll try. He doesn't really get position very well low in the post. Mm-hmm. And Fry took advantage of him on that. But then the Heat sort of started to get it to him in the pick and roll. And that was really a credit to James Johnson, who found like that lob to him a couple times in the first half. And that kind of got him going. But you're right. When they went small with James Johnson at the five, that's when they were able to swing that game towards the Heat's way. And then they kind of got away from it again. I guess you had to, just because Miami just, they're so injured. Like, I don't know who else they're going to play. Like, a lot of people were complaining on Heat Twitter tonight, like, why are you playing all these strange lineups? It was like, they got 10 players that they're playing with. You're going to end up with strange lineups. So, either way, I think Whiteside played well enough, but you're right. It was James Johnson at center. It was that small ball. There was a group at one point that was James Johnson, Wayne Ellington, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, and Goran Dragic. That's an insanely small unit.
Yeah.
But they had to play that way to keep up with the Cavs, who just spaced the ball, you know?
Yeah, the Cavs, it's something that I find interesting, is even when the Cavs don't have LeBron and Kyrie, they didn't really do a lot where they were moving the ball side to side or, like, running a lot of stuff with Love. They kind of didn't really use Love, I thought, very differently than they might have used him in a normal game, which I kind of think that was kind of a bad tactical decision. I know why you would want to keep things sort of the same, and they did run more aggressive pick and rolls from them. They do this little pick and roll now where Love will set a screen near the elbow and he'll just pop back real quick in hopes of mm-hmm. the defender missing him, because it gives him a chance to kind of do what he does best in a short space. That worked well, but Love didn't have a great game overall. I mean, he shot well from the line. I thought he rebounded well, but didn't shoot threes well again, which is problematic, and I thought that hurt. And I think if you're the Cavs, that if you don't have Deron Williams just playing out of his mind, like had 10 turnovers but had 9 assists and just kind of hitting a lot of crazy shots, they might lose this game a bit earlier than they did.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
So, because psychoanalysis of the Cavaliers is way more fun than actual X's and O's analysis of the Cavaliers.
Yeah, give it to me. Let's go.
Kevin Love, he's originally ruled out for this game, right? For like a second. They're like, you know what? He's going to play, right? Mm-hmm. So he's in. LeBron, Kyrie, they're not playing. So this is like, okay, this is Kevin Love's game. Go full Minnesota Timberwolves, Kevin Love. Do your thing. And then he doesn't, but Deron Williams just plays out of his mind, scores like a bazillion points. What does that say about Kevin Love? Is that worrisome, where he had this opportunity, this platform to just be like, we need this game to win, to get the one seed, and even though they didn't, but he could think that way, and I'm going to rise up to this occasion and get us the one seed. I don't need LeBron and Kyrie. I'm going to do this for my squad. And then Deron Williams is the one putting up the points and kind of lifting the Cavs, and Kevin Love is just like playing an average game.
I kind of think that's more about how Lou decided to approach this game than anything, to be honest with you. I think you could argue Love could be more assertive. I think you had a lot of Deron just kind of taking things on his own and going in isolation. Like, it's very telling that the Cavs finished the game with only 19 assists. Like, they didn't, they made 44 field goals, only 19 assists. A lot of one-on-one ball. You had a lot of JR kind of taking some shots. You had a lot of just kind of shots in transition. I kind of think the way to play this game, if you're trying to win the game, you know, against a Heat team that, you know, you still comparatively, like, you can play well against them. They're missing Deion. You know, you're missing your two best players, or at least your best player and your third best player. But you could have won this game maybe differently by slowing the game down a little bit and trying not to let Miami play that way. Because when you were attacking Whiteside, yes, you had spacing, but you could do that slower. I thought that could have been something. And I also think it's telling, like, at least it's interesting to me that they decided to, like, do the Kay Felder thing before he got hurt and then played Larry Sanders for 2 minutes. They didn't do that, like, in the second half consistently. They did it in the first half. Felder got some minutes later on, but he left the game hurt. He might have played more down the stretch. I think they just got tired, too, to be honest. They played in Atlanta on Sunday in an overtime game. And then, you know, you had Deron Williams played a lot on Sunday. You had Love played a lot on Sunday. You had Fry play, like, all these guys played a lot of minutes, and, like, yeah, like, they're high-level athletes, but I think there's some fatigue there, too. Like, Jarris Smith played 40 minutes. You know, like, some of this just isn't, like, ideal timing, I guess. But I kind of agree with you with the Love thing. It's weird to me that they didn't just try to, like, force-feed him on the elbow or, like maybe have Darren, like, lean on him more, because it felt like a lot of Darren running the pick-and-roll with him and then kind of just going for his own shot and creating one-on-one.
Yeah, maybe that's just sort of the nature of point, you know, being a point guard with the ball versus being, you know, a big man, like a power forward like Kevin Love, who has to play off the ball so much. Williams could just literally control who gets the ball, but I don't know. I'm kind of with you too. I thought actually Kevin Love seemed aggressive, like he attacked the boards a lot, like he was crashing, like he was out on the perimeter where he needs to be for three pointers, and then he would crash when the shot went up. Like, I thought he was active. I thought he was aggressive when he had the ball. I'm with you, though. I mean, it was kind of strange how Ty Lue didn't or did utilize him. I don't know, man. But
I just also feel like I'm very of the, like, this game, like, so just like when I watch games, and I don't know how you do this, I have like a Word doc where I'm taking like pretty game by game notes. I think most, if not, you know, a lot of NBA writers do this, and kind of taking my notes. I just decided I was not going to do this for this game. Like, I decided pregame, like, I was like, look, like, I don't need – when I'm going back and, like, doing playoff prep and doing a bunch of different things and, like, getting ready to think about how the Cavs are going to do in the playoffs, this isn't a game I'm going to really revert back to. So I focus on doing some short form and, like, just getting ready for the pod and taking notes for that, but not, like, the detailed notes that I would. I don't think the Cavs functionally, like, actually cared about this game, like, frankly.
Right.
And I also don't – I think, and I'm guilty of this a lot too, especially lately. I just don't think that – like, it's really hard for me to, like, analyze what the Cavs are right now. Like, I'm kind of in this position where I'm trying to figure out do the Atlanta games mean more than that Boston game last week? Because the Boston game is a clear example that this Cavs team is really, really good and have a talent level where they can just dominate other teams like that in the East. But are they going to be able to just flip that switch fully? Because those two Atlanta games – Atlanta is, like, a above 500 team. But, like, you lost to them at home when they were missing a lot of players. Then you had a 26-point lead on Sunday. Like, there's this, like, weird dichotomy where it's, like, they care and then they don't care. And it's really weird. And I just don't know how much you can, like, read into this. Like, I'm of the opinion right now that if, like, what's going on right now and the frustration of watching them, it, like, doesn't matter until it matters. Like, until we see them lose in the playoffs or just look really bad or get down 3-1 in a series that isn't the finals against Golden State, then some of this should have been concerning. But if not, then, like, it just doesn't matter. And that's just, like, a weird thing to wrap my mind around, because it's, like, some of this should matter, but it's, like, harder to say why it does.
This Cavaliers team is, like, the next level of that Big 3 Heat team in terms of we only care when we care. Like, it's, like, even those Heat teams were so frustrating sometimes because they would just – they would just roll the ball out one night and call it quits. And they were just like, we don't care about this game against the Pistons tonight. We just don't care. And they would do that. And it was so frustrating as a fan to watch that sometimes. And not that I would ever wish this Heat season in as a preference over those Heat seasons, you know what I mean? But it is cool to see this Heat team, like, care so much in for every single game, even though they're losing more games and they're not nearly as talented, pretty obviously, you know what I mean? But they do care a lot, so that's kind of neat and fun to watch. This Cavaliers team is like that next level Big 3 team where they're just like, I feel like they really don't care until they're angry or until, like, their backs are completely against the wall or something. What in the first round of the playoffs, do you think that's when they flip that switch? I do think that first, can I ask you a first question? Do you think there is a switch to be flipped?
I do, but I think there is probably a limit to it. Like, I don't think it is, like, as infinite, like, they're going to become this crazy good team. Like, I think
they're still, like, an old, aging team.
Yeah, like, some of their lineups are going to be, like, players that's, like, average of, like, age 33 and above. And I just think, like, defensively, as much as I think their defense will be better in the playoffs, I do think there's no way that defense becomes, like, functionally really good. You know what I mean? Like, last year in the playoffs, they were first in transition defense. I have a really hard time seeing them getting there this year.
That was like an all-time season for J.R. Smith defensively, right? Like, that's going to go down as his best defensive season ever for his career, probably.
Yeah. He might just, like, focus in the playoffs, though. And, like,
right.
Like, for me, like, the thing is, like, if you're going to – and I think they're kind of integral to the rotation. If Fry and Korver are, like, pieces for you, there's just a limit on how effective they're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kyrie thing is, of course, like, if he's putting an effort, he can be passable. Like, you can get to that just, like, working around and all that different stuff. But there's also just, like, he's never going to, like, lock guys down. Like, he's not going to just shut down a Kyle Lowry or a Steph Curry in the playoffs.
Yeah, you definitely have a defensive ceiling, too. And, like, your two of your three best players are Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
It's just – and you know what? I was thinking about this the other day, actually, because we always say defense wins championships, blah, blah, blah. But with the NBA as it evolves – and there's, like, stats, right? Like, teams that are not in the top 10 defensively just don't win championships, or, like, top 11 or something like that. Like, they've never won a championship or something crazy like that. But it would make sense now for that to not be the case anymore, you know, as the NBA shifts to where it's shifting and three-point shooting is such a big deal. Like, you could give up 2 points on defense but score 3 points on offense, and that's fine. Like, you'll win every game if you just keep doing that trade. Mm-hmm. But it would make sense even if this Cavs team is like a top 15 to 18 team defensively in the NBA, but they're so good on offense and they're such a good 3-point shooting team when they're on fire, when they're like locked in the way that they can get, it probably doesn't matter. But that was my first question. My second question is, hypothetically, if the Heat win Wednesday and they make the playoffs, how many games can Miami win in a first-round series against Cleveland, hypothetically, if Cleveland were to get the one seed?
One.
One game. That's where I have them.
I think the only team out of that bottom that let me say this. I do think all the teams that the Cavs could face, so like it looks like Milwaukee is out of that conversation right now. I do think they would have actually really relished playing the Bucks. Like, I would hope there's this Kyrie quote from months ago where he – they played this. I want to say this game was like in December. I could have the date wrong on this, but like Jabari and Giannis had both of these like really big games. They'd had these couple back and forth games, and Kyrie got asked about like the Young Bucks as this like rival to them, and like seeing them in the playoffs. And it was like kind of maybe too early to ask someone about this. And Kyrie,
right.
Kyrie was just like, yeah, it'd be really fun to play them 4 times. And he realized what he said. And then he kind of just, like, kind of was like, oh, I maybe shouldn't have, like, necessarily said that. But I think, like, they got really annoyed by the Bucks. I think, like, Indiana has, because of Paul George, because of the pieces they have, I think would push them as well. The Bulls have Butler. I don't think LeBron would, like losing to Dwayne Wade, you know, like, really getting, like, pushed
right.
to Dwayne Wade. And the Heat, I think there's definitely, like, some... That last Heat game, not this one, but the one before in Miami where there was that little dust-up, I think there's a little bit of bad blood. I don't think the Deion-Kyrie relationship and that dynamic is particularly cordial, and I do think there's probably some LeBron like wanting to stomp out the Heat. Like, I don't think LeBron would
yeah.
really be happy with like sending them out. But I think all those teams have something in common, which there's a limit to it. Like, I don't think those teams get more than one, maybe two games, like if things kind of break really badly for the Cavs in that first round. But all those teams, I think, can do things to the Cavs that are going to make them uncomfortable. Like, Paul George can make the Cavs' defense uncomfortable. He's going to push LeBron. The Heat are really, really good at getting ball creation and getting shot to the rim and, like, moving the ball. Like, they play at a pace. Like, Dragic is, like, perfect to test Kyrie. You know, that matters.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, LeBron is the trump card to all of this. Like, if they play the Heat and the Heat go small like they did tonight to get back in the game, the Cavs have a lineup with LeBron at the five that a friend of the pod, both of our pods, I guess, Scott Rafferty wrote just about it over the Sporting News.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you put LeBron at the five, like, things get really hard for other teams that aren't Golden State. So, like, I think those trump cards are there. It would just be, like, to me personally, I kind of think the Heat series is the one I kind of am most interested in seeing. Like, I just think, like, the pettiness of the rivalry, like, the way the Heat are going to play and what coach they are, I think that might be something the Cavs just kind of need. Like, I think they kind of need a team like the Pistons last year that's really well coached and is going to play them really hard to maybe wake them up a little bit. Like, I do think, like, the Pistons, even though that series only went 4 games last year, I think that had some value to the Cavs' title run. It put them in a frame of mind that these are going to be tough games and you have to work for them. And they haven't really had that, like, in a while. Like, their most notable win recently is that it's just them drubbing the Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, LeBron teams historically just take care of business in the first round. Like, they'll go all out just so that they make sure that they sweep or five game the first series. That way they get as much rest as possible. So that makes sense. I'm with you. I mean, the emotional side and just like the sheer competitiveness of like a Heat team could probably net you one game. You know what I mean? To get one game in Miami, you probably get one out of that. The Bucks, they probably, you know, Giannis could just have a crazy night. Indiana has like two good players, you know what I mean? So Paul George could just like go off for one night and maybe win you a game. That's basically it. But I'm with you. I think it's probably a four game sweep against Indiana and maybe at best five games against Milwaukee or Miami. But that makes sense. I like that theory about having a well coached team to play them in the first round. So you think Miami then would probably be the best out of it, just as far as just getting them ready for the playoff run? Miami might be the best case scenario for them.
I think it's Milwaukee or Miami. I think like, okay, if it's Milwaukee, it's because of Giannis, it's because of Chris Middleton. I get like really mixed reads on people's opinion of Jason Kidd, but like the Bucks just have, I think, some elements that could really push the Cavs.
I'm a Jason Kidd fan.
I am too, but I see like people like say like he's not a good coach, and I don't really get that. The Pacers to me, like, the Paul George and Miles Turner are reasons to like to think that's a good test, but like that isn't a team that like I get really good vibes off of, right? Like,
right,
I don't get like that Paul George is like buying into this like culture and this system that is going to be like unified in the playoffs. Ditto for the Bulls. Like, I don't think a Fred Hoiberg coach team, unless they're on TNT, is like not really gonna like push the Cavs. The Heat have Spoelstra, they have the culture, they have the style that they know what they're gonna do. It's not like they're gonna like have to.
They're not gonna roll over,
right? And they're not gonna roll over. Yeah, like that to me is like the thing about the Pistons last year that I thought was like valuable. Like, there was the Stanley Johnson stuff where he like maybe like took it like a little too far against LeBron, but like they were not afraid of the Cavs. Like, you had the Drummond stuff in that series. You had them just playing very physical. The Heat are not gonna maybe necessarily be like quite as like physical like James Johnson might. But like Dan Waiters is not backing down in that series. Like,
no, he thinks he's the best player in that series. I mean, everybody's healthy. Dan Waiters is like, I'm better than everybody here.
He is the best player in that series.
Like, oh, that's true.
Let's keep it real. Yeah. Come on. Waiters Island. Condo Price is. I mean, it's like kind of lukewarm right now because of that ankle. But
now's the time to get in, guys.
Yeah, come on, buy in. The 8 seed upset. But like, I think the Heat team are like, they have the guys that are not going to, like, James Johnson's like not going to back down in that series. Like, they're going to go at the Cavs, and I think there's some value to that if you're Cleveland. Like, I really do think maybe you need something that's going to jar you, because like, as much as Cavs Twitter is pretty largely pretty confident that they're going to get out of the East, and I would say I am too, if they're going to get there, like, it's going to be harder in the second round this year than it would be last year. Like, if you get Washington in round two, or you get Toronto in round two, those are really hard series. Like, Toronto's going to be really good. Washington is really, really good. So it's like a harder road one way or the other.
And that, you know, when we talk about the Cavaliers, they've got a whole 2 months more to play of basketball probably. But for the Heat, you know, they've got one more game this season. They might make the playoffs. If they do, they're probably a first-round exit. When you look at this team from the outside in, because obviously I'm following this team, I'm a little biased, a lot of the Heat conversation is, what would this team be if it was playing like this all season? Because it wasn't just that they were injured to start the season, which they were. They've been injured all season. But they also didn't know how to play. Like, they were just posting up Whiteside every game in the beginning before they figured out this drive and kick thing, before they figured out that James Johnson was the second coming of LeBron James. Like, before they figured all this stuff out, then once they did, they kind of turned that corner, 13-game win streak, et cetera, et cetera. But from the outside looking in, you kind of look at this team. You've seen this team against the Cavaliers like three times now. Like, this team, this Heat team. If hypothetically they run this team back, right? They re-sign James Johnson, they re-sign Deion Waiters, blah blah blah. They have the same team with a healthy Justice Winslow next year, plus I guess a first-round draft pick, whatever rookie. You add that to the roster. How many wins can this Heat team win, do you think?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. If you run it back, Winslow to me is an X factor, because you would think in theory that shoulder injury would hurt his development a little bit, right? Like, you would think if he needed to bruise a shooter and he tore a shoulder, but he makes them better defensively. And he seems like a guy who would fit into what they're doing right now, right? Like, I don't think his, like, fit is, like, abnormal to what they need. I mean, I don't know if they get.
You put him in the Rodney Magruder spot, right? He's a better ball handler. He's a better defender. He gives you some length. He'll give you an answer to guys like Paul George, stuff like that.
Yeah, he could throw him. Like, he may not succeed DeRozan. All the time, but like you can throw him at those guys for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if like they. I don't think they get like quite as high as. Like, they're going to finish at, like, either, like, if they're going to make the playoffs, they're going to be a 41-win team. I think you could get to, like, 45, maybe, like, if everything breaks correctly. Like, I don't know if you get to, like, 50 seems like a lot if you don't have, like, if like, Dion and Dragic and Whiteside are, like, your, let's say those, like, your three, like, best guys. Like, that to me seems like there's, like, a cap on what you can be. But, like, I mean, maybe you... Like, maybe if you find, like, some pieces that fit, like, well around that, you can make it work. And it's not like the East is, like, great either. I think, like, 45 could be, like, a capital. I think some of that would depend on, like, is Indiana better next year? Are the Bucks better? Because Giannis takes, like, another big leap forward. Like, mm-hmm. I think, like, some of that would be dependent on those other teams. Like, Charlotte, point differential-wise, is, like, not a 36-win team. You know what I mean? Like, they're better than, like, that. And, like, the Pistons, to me, like, underperformed, even though, like, they have their own, like, bajillion set of issues. But, like, I mean, I'm kind of curious about this. Do you think they should, like, run this back? This, I guess, is my question. Because, like, that's, like, a big thing, but it's like, if you're Pat Riley and you're the Heat, you clearly don't, this is not what you, like, want to be, right? Like, but I also, like, because I think, like, don't they owe some picks? Like, aren't
they they don't have a first round pick. They still owe Phoenix two first round picks for Dragic, and those two first round picks will translate between now and 2021.
Right. So if you're gonna tank, this would have probably been the year. If you were gonna like say like we're gonna do this.
Right.
But like they seem like they're just like too well coached.
It's this year and next year, because if they tank next year and they end up I think with a top seven pick, they keep it. So they have a really good incentive to tank next year. And if they don't, if it's not top seven, if it falls outside the top seven, it goes to Phoenix. But they're not going to tank, you know? Like, we've seen this team, like, they're just not, like, unless they really, really suck and just naturally suck, that's how they're going to get a top seven pick. But I don't know, man. That's the fundamental question. What does this team want to be? And everybody says Pat Riley wants to win championships. Well, I think that, I know that's true. Most guys want to win championships, but I'm not sure what's more important. I'm not sure if winning championships is more important or just winning more games than you lose is more important to Pat Riley. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like he might be happy with 48 wins a season because you're winning more than you lose. And that's fine. But a 48 win team a lot of times isn't going to win the NBA finals. So it depends. Like, he doesn't have that many years left where he's going to be doing this, right? He's 70 something years old. He's going to be retiring soon. Everybody knows it. He's already grooming Alonzo Mourning and Shane Battier to take the mantle. But does he go for one more big swing? I think that's what's going to happen this offseason. He's going to make the swing for Gordon Hayward, Blake Griffin, whatever free agent he decides he wants. He's going to make that big swing. That's plan A. Plan B, then, I think, is running this thing back. The real question is, how much of this does he run back? Does he sign Deion Waiters to a long-term contract?
Oh, that's selfish reasons. That to me is one of the most fascinating contracts of the summer because he's been like until like the ankle injury was just like incredible. Like, he was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
His track record would not indicate that that is what he actually is.
And it was like, such a small sample size. It was like a 15 to 20 game sample size where he was just on fire compared to the rest of his career. Yeah, right. It's crazy.
And if you look at if you want to extend the doubt a little bit, his best two stretches did though come back. He was really good in the playoffs last year for OKC,
yep,
filling that specific role. And then the expanded version of Miami has been pretty good overall. But like, what do you want to like? But if Deion's at his best, is he like your second best player? Because that's sort of what you have to pay him. Like, and to me, that seems like it'd be a lot. Like, you don't want to like tie yourself into like a Dragic, Whiteside, Waiters core. Like, that to me would probably not be ideal. Unless that's what you want. I mean, maybe like the thing you could do is like, as I Google like guys that could be available. I mean, maybe if you can't like swing big, you slightly upgrade on the stretchiness. Like, you can maybe you can get JJ like Redick or someone like that to like come and like you pay him and you pay him a lot, but like maybe get Patrick Patterson and like just improve on like the stretchiness and the shootiness and like just build around like that. And like, there's like a cap on that. and like you don't have like the Harden to like kind of elevate it. But like maybe that's like enough to like contend for a 5 or 4 seed next year. Like maybe
that's the question: is who are you building around? Are you building around Goran Dragic? Are you building around Hassan Whiteside, or are you building around this young group of Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, and Justice Winslow? That's the question. And that when it comes to roster building, you don't know, because all of a sudden you have a guy like Tyler Johnson who you just paid $50 million. You've got Josh Richardson who you're in on as a future part of this roster, whatever this might end up being. Do you then re-sign Dion Waiters to a long-term deal? If you do, then you're admitting like what you're saying. That's your top three, unless you trade Whiteside, of course, or Dragic. But you're basically, if you re-sign Waiters, then you're saying this is our top three, and we're going to build around this group. I think you can do stuff as long as the guys around them, because like Dragic and Waiters, they attack and kick out so well. Like they're two of the top six at driving to the rim in the NBA this season, and they're really good at passing out from under the rim, and that creates so many open looks for others. And that's like a cool tag team that's really reminiscent of that like Bledsoe Dragic thing that Phoenix had, but ends up screwing up. So if like Miami can kind of make Waiters the Bledsoe of that formula and then just don't screw it up by bringing in a bunch of other point guards, but then they kind of already do, right? They have Richardson and Tyler Johnson. So this is a very pivotal offseason for Miami, because it's going to determine what direction they're going to go in.
Yeah. Let me ask you two questions.
Okay.
Are you actually secretly building around Spoelstra? That's my first question. Like, are you secretly building? Yeah, I think you. Like, I kind of think you are.
That's a really, really good way to put it. Like he is the centerpiece, and players will just get. I always say, players get 20% better defensively under Spoelstra, and they just get better under Spoelstra. But specifically defensively, 20% better across the board.
Yeah.
And you get in better shape, and you. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the James Johnson like Wade anecdote is like my top five like NBA anecdote for me this year. Number two, let's say they like the Heat win Wednesday, they make the playoffs, like they get in, and if you could kind of just, if you're gonna say who do you think they would have the best chance of beating in the first round out of the Cavs? Oh, I guess it's kind of, well, I mean, I guess they could they get up to? It might be harder like for them to get up to.
Miami can get up to 7 at the most.
So they can get up to 7. I mean, do you think? I mean, I'm assuming you think they would have a better chance of beating Boston than Cleveland.
100%, because Boston scares me when they go small with Olynyk or Horford at the 5. But Miami has played Boston really well. In this last game that Miami played against Boston a couple weeks ago, they lost, but it wasn't by much. It was like 4 or 5 points, I want to say. But in that game, I left that game feeling like the Heat could beat this team, and I think they could beat this team 4 times in 7 games. And that's because Whiteside, as frustrating as it can be, his ceiling is dominating. Like, he can dominate a game from start to finish. Like, he can get a triple-double with blocks. Like, that is his absolute ceiling, is just absolute dominance. And he can, when you look at matchups, he could do that against Boston easier than any other team, because they just don't have a guy that can rebound with Whiteside. They don't have a guy that can battle him on the glass or keep him from scoring if he's getting to the rim in pick-and-roll situations, if the Heat are able to put him in that position. And between that, well, let me rephrase that. How the Celtics win games is by shooting a lot of threes, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really how Miami wins games, is by just making a bunch of threes, is drive and kick, and that's really what Boston likes to do. So if all things are equal and both teams shoot 40% from the game, from three-point range, then Whiteside just has his game, right? He just goes 15 and 12 from the floor. That probably gives the advantage to Miami, right? Like, so they're better defensively, they're better on the glass, and look, Boston is way deeper, but, you know, in the playoffs, your rotation shrinks, so the depth doesn't become as much as an advantage. As fun and as good as Brad Stevens is, Eric Spoelstra's still a better coach. He's at least gotten out of the first round of the playoffs. So, you know, it's just
I'm very much here for like the Celtics like skepticism, because I'm
painting the picture of how they win. Boston is still a better team, but as far as a matchup, that's how they win.
Yeah,
I don't want to sound I'm prognosticating.
Also like sort of here for like the Boston, like we should wrap this up, but like the Boston skepticism for me is like very fair, just because like A, you haven't gotten out of the first round,
Right.
I think Isaiah Thomas has been incredible this year. They have to figure out how to make him fully work in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's 5'7". Like, you can – I'm 100% with you, and I've repeated this on the Locked On Heat podcast. It's just like, let's get out of the first round, and let me see a good series from Isaiah Thomas from start to finish, and then I'll believe in the Celtics. I'm not rooting against them to be bad. I'm not saying that they are bad. I'm just like, all right, before we anoint this, Brad Stevens is the third best coach in the NBA, and Isaiah Thomas is one of the best point guards in the league, let me see it in the playoffs. That's all I want. That's all we're saying, right?
Yeah, my favorite conspiracy theory about the NBA is that the Celtics aren't actually, like, trying to win with this core. They're just – and it's not at all, like, true, probably. But, like, my favorite conspiracy is that they're just, like – they're, like, going to – they're trying to, like, get guys like Fultz and Jaylen Brown, like, prepared by playing on, like, good teams. And then, like, have, like, certain guys like Jay Crowder and other guys there to like, prepare them and stuff. And then, like, then they'll turn the keys over to Jaylen Brown and Markel Fultz in, like, 5 years. Like, now this is just, like, the stopgap. Because, like, think about, like, the questions they face. Like, if they don't win, like, let's say they lose, like, in the second round this year, and Isaiah's, mm-hmm. like, facing this, like, mega contract as he's, like, in his prime. Like, they, like, those are, like, hard decisions. Like, they have, like, them and, like, the Raptors having to pay Lowry are, like, very interesting things to me.
Unless you have a LeBron James-type player, I don't think you can win a championship with Isaiah Thomas. He gives up so much defensively that you need somebody that can just be Kawhi Leonard or LeBron and just guard multiple positions at the same time. Like, you just, I don't see how it works. And I'm not trying to be a naysayer here, but it's really fascinating because if you do end up with Alonzo Ball or Markel Fultz, who should be playing point guard for you and whose ceiling is much higher than Isaiah Thomas, and I like Isaiah Thomas, like, I have no problem with him, and I like watching regular season Isaiah Thomas, but you do sort of have a ceiling with him as your number one scorer, and he can't be a number two scorer. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that works.
No, like,
so they have to trade him at some point, right? Like, you kind of have to.
Yeah, like, I mean, think about, like, what he would look like if he was, like, your number two. Like, I think he could work in certain situations, but, like, what is that situation? Like, it's probably, right. I mean, like, maybe him in, like, a spread-out system where it's, like Anthony Davis, you know? Like, who maybe is, like, a this big who doesn't necessarily, like, if you could get him to play that way, it could work. But, like, it didn't work with him in Boogie.
Right.
You know, like, it didn't really work when he got lost in the shuffle in Phoenix. That's sort of
he needs to be on a team. Like, there's certain teams that just aren't going to win championships, right? Mm-hmm. And Boston is not one of those teams. Boston is a team that is going to try to win championships. There's certain teams in the NBA that just don't win. Isaiah Thomas needs to be on one of those teams, and they can just make that team super fun. And that team just gets really, really fun for the regular season, and that's what they do, and that's their purpose in the NBA, and that would be great. But but being in Boston, it's a really weird fit because they want to win a championship, but I don't know if you can with him.
And they love him too. Like Boston yes. fans like are very defensive of him. Like, shout out to, we're not related, but like Bob Manning from Celtics blog like has Isaiah like third in his MVP ballot, which I find fucking crazy. But they love Isaiah Thomas. Like, okay, let's wrap it up on this. I'm very curious about this. The LeBron, like, what do you? I just from the outside, you cover LeBron, like when you mm-hmm. when he played for the Heat. What do you make of like A, his year, and B, where he has the Cavs at right now?
Are we talking about like MVP race stuff right now, or are we just talking in general?
I kind of guess both because I think he's probably. I can't say that, like, I've done like the deep dives that like Matt Moore, shout out to Matt Moore, like has done on this. LeBron's,
I think his
like,
year
third
has been
four, like third or fourth.
Yeah,
like,
third or fourth yeah. is fine. I think that there's definitely some, okay, this is what LeBron does, and there's definitely some tiredness to it. But I think you can make the case for him every year that he's the MVP. And as far as this year, this is an MVP caliber season in the years where there's not like a historic season, because this isn't an historic season. Like, if I had a vote, I don't know if I would vote for Harden or Westbrook. I really don't, but I think it's between those two guys just because of the numbers that they put up was so historic. Mm-hmm. But I always have this feeling with LeBron. It's like he could be better than those guys this year if he wanted to. Like he could have been Russell Westbrook if he wanted to be. Like, you know what I mean? And there's no way to prove it, but you just feel it. Like, he could have had the season that James Harden did if he wanted to, but it's not his – like, Westbrook's priority this season, like, his headline has been written already. You know what I mean? Yeah. Russell Westbrook passes Oscar Robinson in triple-doubles for a season. That's his headline. It doesn't matter what they do in the playoffs. They're not going to do anything in the playoffs. It doesn't matter. The accomplishment has been accomplished. It's done. Harden, it's still not there yet. Like, there, it's gonna, but it's more like, okay, how much noise can you make in the playoffs? You're not really going to be beat. You're not going to beat the Warriors, though. But, like, how it, does this translate? Can you guys be better? Can you guys be better than the Clippers, for example? Like, what's your, what's your limit here? But for Cleveland, it's like, nobody's going to even remember what their regular season record was. I can't even tell. I could tell you Russell Westbrook's and Harden's averages right now. I have no idea what LeBron is averaging. It doesn't matter. It doesn't. It's just like, it doesn't. Nobody's going to remember how many wins they had. Like, it's all about the playoffs for them. And that's what LeBron, and that's when LeBron came to Cleveland, that's what he wanted. Same thing in Miami. It was just like, I don't need to go win. There was only one time LeBron ever cared about an individual player award, and that's when he said, I wanted to win Defensive Player of the Year. And he never won it. But it was like the one thing that he wanted, because I think Jordan won once, and he wanted to have that. But he's never won it, and I think that was like the last time he really tried. That time and that one time where he scored like 60%, he made 60% of his field goals for like 2 months, which was like crazy. Those are like the two times where he cared, and I think that was him testing. Like, can I do this? I can do it if I want to. But I don't. I want to go win a championship instead. So he did it for a short while. Like, he was the best defender in the league for a full season in 2011. But he didn't just. I don't know, man. Like, it was just like he tested it enough just to know that he could do it. But when it comes down to it, he ultimately just wants to win championships, and that's why he's been to so many finals straight. Is because he's not going balls out like Russell Westbrook is every season. So. That's what I make of LeBron James.
No, I think that's 100% right. Like, Russ, like, I'm going to mispronounce his name. Joseph from USA Today.
It's Addy.
Like, yeah, it's Addy. If you're listening to this, tweet me and let me know, man. But he said, like, this has been Russell Westbrook season, and, like, that's true. Like, it has been, like, the why not season, you know? Like, yeah. I think that's been the thing. Harden and Morey are like campaigning for Harden to get MVP, like, and they should be, but like it just feels like this is like Russ's season, like, which is gonna drive Warriors Twitter like absolutely crazy, which is gonna be hilarious. But like LeBron, it's also really funny because he definitely will like view like him not getting MVP like sort of as a slight. Like, he 100% will be like, yeah, like, I'm the – you know what I mean? Like, he will do that.
He doesn't care.
Really, no, and, but, yeah, it's like he doesn't care, but it's like he will just, like, use it to create some kind of
drama. Yes, 100%. He won't care, really, but he'll care enough for it to just be a chip on his shoulder. And he'd be like, if I meet any of you guys in the finals, you're done. Yeah. Like
– yeah. That's why, like, I think that Celtics game to me matters more – than yes. any of the games that they've played recently, because they just went out and, like, wrecked Boston. Like, and it wasn't even like they played, like, that second quarter when LeBron just went nuclear and was, like, cyborg LeBron for, like, 8 minutes. Like, that was like, the Cavs that, like, are incredibly going to be incredibly hard to beat for, like, any team in the NBA. Like, that's the team that can create a bunch of problems. And, like, were, you know, did they play great defense when they came over? Well, not necessarily, but, like, I think they can, like, if they get to that point again, and they probably will, that to me is the more of what it's indicative of what they are than like the Celtics, like than the Hawks games or like the Heat game,
right?
Or like if they play like Kay Felder and Larry Sanders 40 minutes against the Raptors in the season finale, which I kind of hope they do. That to me is more interesting. I do sort of miss like covering a team like a Heat where it's like every game sort of has like this like defined value. Because I generally have not known what to make of the Cavs for like 2.5 weeks. Like, I generally just have no idea.
Every team, I know we have to wrap up soon, but every team says we don't look forward on the schedule. We're just focused on the team in front of us. And that's, I don't know if the Cavaliers say it, and if they do, it's horseshit. Because, like, I know for a fact what, like, I shouldn't, like, they will take like a week's worth of games and just circle the one that they want to win. Yeah. And that's it, right? And if they win the other ones, it's great. And they just do on sheer talent and power and strength. But they'll like that. I don't know the other games around that Boston game, like the Hawks game, right? Like, they were just like, whatever, the Hawks game. But this, we're circling this Boston game because screw these guys. We're going to beat this game. We're going to win this game. And whatever they do that week is kind of just geared towards winning that Boston game. And if they win the other games on the periphery, it's fine. They do, and that's fine. But that's what they do. And when LeBron left Miami – I wasn't most upset because Miami wasn't going to be a championship team anymore. I was most upset because I didn't, that meant I couldn't watch LeBron on a game-to-game basis, because there's going to be nights when Cleveland is playing on the same night as Miami. So I still have to cover the Heat here. But I didn't get to just witness LeBron and his greatness every night. And that kind of sucked. I was like, I can't just like watch his every move anymore, because that's so entertaining and it's so intriguing. And now LeBron, early in his career, right, like 2004 to like 2010, he was just full tilt LeBron every night, basically, where he's just doing something crazy, where he was just Russell Westbrook every night. And it was effortless almost. And now it's like he has to pick his spots more. And this is kind of like the new, really intriguing version of LeBron, is because you don't know exactly what night. Like, you can kind of almost predict, like, we sort of knew that he was going to get up for that Boston game, right? But it's really cool to just see, oh, when he does turn it on and when he does really care, that's really fun. And it's just like you get these little flashes throughout the 82-game season where he'll just turn it on. He'll just be playoff LeBron for maybe like two quarters. It won't even be like a full game, but once you see it, it's just so much fun. And then you just wait for that. It's just like just enough to tease you until the playoffs, or really until like the conference finals and the NBA finals, where he just does that 100% of the time.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. Let me ask you one last thing, because you know LeBron, because you cover the teams. They add Dante Jones. So they're reportedly going to add Dante Jones, friend of the pod. Chris Reichert reported that from the Step Back. They cut DeAndre Liggins. It's really interesting to me that they added a guy who, like, realistically is, like, not as good of a basketball player as DeAndre Liggins. Like, that to me is, like, really interesting. They've just hired a guy that is, like, hasn't played basketball since last June, that is just, like, there to, like, be tough. That's, like, interesting to me.
That, to me, screams LeBron move, because there was, even when LeBron was in Miami, there's been connections between Dante Jones and LeBron James's Heat teams. And that was sort of a move that they were like going to make a couple of times, but just never really pulled the trigger on. And I think that's what followed. Richard Jefferson also was an example. Like, if LeBron doesn't go to Cleveland in 2014, Richard Jefferson's on the Heat in 2015. Like, that was a move that was going to happen. Dante Jones was another one. It was just like, I think he's just one of LeBron's dudes, and I don't know what the connection is, but he's probably like, I want this guy in my locker room. And it was just always, it just sort of almost happened a couple times, and I think that it eventually had to happen. And LeBron definitely sees something in Dante Jones where he's like, I need that guy in my locker room, and DeAndre Liggins is going to basically be out of the rotation in the playoffs probably, so I want dude in my locker room.
Out of the rotation now, I think. Like DeAndre Liggins is like, you know, he has his past, but he's a very quiet guy when I've had the chance to talk to him.
Yeah.
And Dante Jones, I think the thing besides him making that playing game six last year and like basically hitting Biombo in the below the belt, you know, in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, like people probably most know him for the time he like stared down Draymond, like bumped Draymond. And like there's a clip of Draymond like staring at him. Like, I think he's just there to kind of, like, be tough. But that's just, like, a weird read when you consider James Jones is already in the locker room. Richard and Channing bring the levity. If you've listened to, like, 5 seconds of Road Trip and you know those two guys are the biggest nerds, like, ever. But, like, James Jones and LeBron, like, shaped the locker room. I think Darren's a pretty
good locker room. Does Dante Jones walk in and give them what Channing Frye gave them last year when they traded for Channing Frye, and Channing Frye walks in, he's like, why are you guys all miserable all the time? You have a chance to win the finals, and it kind of like created a buzz. Does Dante Jones walk in? He's like, what the hell's going on in here? I've been out of the league. I'm just happy to be here. Why aren't you guys more happy? Maybe that's like the random on the like the bottom of the roster churn that you could do to just maybe like boost this team a little bit. Maybe that's what it is.
I actually like that theory quite a bit.
Okay.
I like that. I'm a fan of that. I think that makes sense. And maybe they need it. Like maybe they feel like they need someone that can get them out of the funk, because I do think there probably is some sort of mental funk they're going through right now. And I think, I mean, you know this from the LeBron Heat teams, like you get 3-4 years into consecutive title runs, like I think there is some value to having like that levity that Golden State seems to have, right? Like that carefreeness, that like that sense of just like you have each other's backs. Like maybe you need something like that, like a Dante Jones in that locker room.
Maybe, yeah.
Because the Cavs are just like more dramatic than Golden State.
A little bit.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up. Heat, Will they make the playoffs, yes or no?
I've been saying yes, so I see no reason to get off of it now. They're still in it.
I hope they do. Like, I would rather have them in the playoffs than the Bulls.
What about the Cavs? Do they make it?
No, they're lose first round. They'll lose first round. You heard it here first. The hot you can fire off. No, they're gonna. I think they get to the finals again. But I don't know if you would agree with this, but I kind of feel like there's gonna be no in between. If they things are really bad, I feel like it's gonna go bad right away and not be like a second round type thing. I feel like if it's just gonna go to hell, it's gonna happen right away. But I don't really see that. I think there's a less than 1% chance of that happening. Because I feel like this is the conversation we had last year or the year before where it's are they actually any good? And then it's just oh, that's right. LeBron James is incredible. He's the best player in basketball. And
it's a really slim chance that they don't make the finals, I think. At the beginning of the year, I would have said it was 100%, and now I'm saying it's 93% chance that they make the finals.
Who do you think would be most likely to get out of the East?
If not the Cavs?
Yeah.
Maybe Toronto?
Yeah, if Toronto's healthy, I think
they'd be the most likely. But I still, they have the Celtics stink on them. You know what I mean? It's just all right, do you really do anything in the playoffs? I don't know. I would say Toronto has the best chance. Washington's close because I think John Wall can just go full best player in the game on any given night and just lift that team, but probably Toronto.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I mean, this has been fun. I mean, if they play in the playoffs, which is my choice first round, we'll have to do this again, get some David Romilla on there. But listeners out there, go give both podcasts 5-star ratings and reviews. We're both going to be doing pods and wrapping up the regular season. But this has been Chris Manning. It's been Wes Goldberg. It's been a Locked On Cavs, Locked On Heat podcast crossover. And Wes, I'll be back tomorrow. Will you be back tomorrow for your listeners?
Absolutely.
Always, Monday through Friday, Locked On Network, daily podcast covering the NBA. We'll talk to you guys again soon.
Support for this podcast comes from Dice.com, the career hub for tech. With their new salary predictor, Dice makes it easier for you to understand how much your skills are worth. They'll even show you which skills are most likely to increase your pay. And with over 70,000 tech jobs, you'll be able to put those skills to good use when you find your next role. Dice is always free for job seekers, so visit dice.com/canyouhackit to see how you can start hacking your career today.